Shrink Wrap Radio number 781. Neuroscience educator Sarah Payton on affirmations for turbulent times.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Sarah Payton, author, international speaker, and neuroscience educator. We're going to be discussing her work and her latest book, Affirmations for Turbulent Times, Resonant Words to Soothe Body and Mind. Now, here's the interview. Sarah Payton, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, David.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here. We're going to be discussing your book, Affirmations for Turbulent Times, Resonant Words to Soothe Body and Mind. And Turbulent Times, this book is just in time, in a way.
Yeah.
And I understand this is the third in a series of books that you've published, all focusing on resonance.
Yes.
So tell us how you got interested in resonance and, you know, what does resonance, what is it? What does it mean to you? All of that.
Well, what's so interesting about language is that the words that we use are almost like the neurotransmitters that travel in our brains. So you and I have all these neurons in our brains that are carrying information from one to the other. And here we are, separated from each other's neurons. How do we communicate neuron to neuron, even though we are in separate skulls? And the words that we use bring different kinds of neurochemicals between us. So if I use words that conjure up and bring us together in warmth, then that changes our neurochemicals for each of us. So resonance is the experience of being with others.
Okay.
And really kind of tuning into and reflecting what we understand about them, and the other person saying, yes, you understand me, sort of like we are cellos vibrating together.
Yeah, often in these interviews, I'll feel a special connection with my guest, and I don't think I ever applied resonance to it. What have I thought of it as? Empathy or something like that. But the word resonance really fits well, I think, for what you're talking about.
And so what's
your history with resonance? How did you become interested in that?
It came actually through my study of nonviolent communication, which came from my longing to change the world. I was like, how the heck do we change the world? And I got Marshall Rosenberg's book, Speak Peace. And I was like, this is cool stuff. I'm going to go investigate this. Uh-huh. And I went off to a Marshall Rosenberg workshop, and people were talking in a really weird way that was not familiar to me. And as people were talking to me about stuff that was important to me, I felt my brain changing. And I was like, what is going on here? So that started me on. It was really a good time to start wondering about brains, because this was right after a 10-year period where in the United States, lots of learning centers, lots of universities had received grants to get MRI machines. And they'd all started to look at how do we change each other's brains? How do relationships affect us? How are we changed by relational connection? And so many of these researchers discovered wonders, really, about the way in which when we use language in certain ways with each other, brains change, amygdala's calm, trauma is healed. Wow. And yeah. So I was like, what? How do we talk about this? How do we write about it? How do we teach it? How do we practice it? What happens when we practice it? And that was my resonance journey, was like, wow,
yeah.
What is this stuff and how do we use it?
Well, speaking of teaching, you describe yourself as a neuroscience educator. Yeah. And so I want to ask you, how did you get your own education in neuroscience?
I am one of those medieval lovers of learning that came into, you know, the present day times and said, wow, look at this abundance. Now, if one is actually a neuroscientist, then you have to get your PhD and you have to study a particular thing and you have to get like really focused. My neuroscientist friends are like, I work on the neuron that connects the vagus nerve with the brainstem. And they've been working on that neuron for 25 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, that little bit of information, though very important, does not allow us to change the world. So I take all of my neuroscientist friends' information that seems like it's going to help us common folks understand our brains and have more self-compassion. And then I teach it.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm a lover of the material and read research every day and correspond with neuroscientists and ask them to speak for me in my community.
Well, I must say you have a wonderfully expressive face. Oh. And so that's how you're speaking to my neurons right now, is enjoying your face and your presence that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen
Porges, you know, the fellow who developed the polyvagal theory, he says that when our faces are mobile, we're letting each other know that we feel safe with each other. There's a real invitation to a neuroception of safety when our voices are alive and our faces.
Yeah. You know, as a male, I I think culturally my face is a bit frozen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It comes along with the at least cultural baggage of being a male, I think.
Yeah.
And the related question is, I know that you say that your affirmations that are in your book that we're going to be discussing more are grounded in neuroscience. So how so? What's the connection?
My editor at Norton, she tells the story of this book. She said she was going home and talking to her family, to her two kids and her partner. She was telling them about all the things that she was publishing about trauma.
Yeah.
And her kids finally said to her, why don't you publish something happy?
Right. Yeah.
So she actually,
it takes a child.
Yeah. Right. So she called me up and said, hey, Sarah, you want to do an affirmations book for me? And I said, sure. I love my editor, so I would probably do anything that she asked me to do. And then I went to look at the research into affirmations because I, of course, love research. And what I found, I was really struck by it. There's quite a bit of research that shows that when human beings use affirmations, it supports their well-being, it supports mood, it supports the immune system. So I was like, wow, this is a fun discovery, because I wasn't, you know, working primarily in the world of affirmations before I started work on the book. But as I worked into it, I discovered the way in which my resonance work is already very filled with affirmations. And as we settle into these particular kinds of affirmations, where we first acknowledge the wonderings, I call them. What are our wonderings? Because we've got I have a friend who says we have a little guy sitting on our shoulder. We do an affirmation and the little guy says, oh, yeah, sure. Like, yeah. My life is filled with abundance. And the little guy on the shoulder goes, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And And so if we talk to the little guy first, and this is what those wonderings are, if we say, do you need a little acknowledgement? If we're working on abundance, for example, do you need a little acknowledgement that you grew up in poverty? Do you need a little acknowledgement that you made coffee tables out of wooden spools for cable, you know? Do you need some acknowledgement that you never, that you never had a sense that there was enough? And now that we've acknowledged that, what if a sense of abundance is your birthright?
Yeah.
What if abundance belongs to all of us? Yeah. And so then the little guy's calm because he's been acknowledged. And then the body gets to take that full sweetness in.
I know about the little guy. Most of us do.
Yeah.
And so what's the relationship between affirmations and brain resilience? Because I know that's something else that you've looked into, and I'll have a little sip as well.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. The relationship between resilience and affirmations is really lovely. Resilience is our ability to get up after we've been knocked down. Resilience is the ability to live with life as it is and to continue to grow and flourish no matter what's happening in life as it is. It's really deeply connected with what scientists often call post-traumatic growth. Instead of post-traumatic stress disorder, we get to have post-traumatic growth. We get to find the lessons and the truths and the strengths that reside in us that come from our experiences of surviving and even thriving after trauma.
By the way, you mentioned that you're editor at Norton Books, and I just wanted to say that that's really a strong affirmation for you, because they are the leading publisher of all of this leading edge neuroscience.
Yes. Yes.
So, I find myself interviewing quite a few of their authors because their publishing has really turned out to be the, kind of the go-to place for well-established, respectable science.
Yes.
So good for you.
Yeah. It's a sweet a marriage made in heaven for me.
Yeah, I'll bet. And, you know, going back to the feeling good about the spool table that one has made.
Yeah.
It seems to me to relate directly to resilience, that that's part of it, is kind of patting oneself on the other shoulder and saying, hey, look what you've done here. You know, that you've come out of a humble background. Or I remember as a student, I haven't really in many ways I've retained the furnishings of my student days.
Yeah.
But it feels good to get by with what you have.
And to be creative and making new uses for things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's a little bit, you know, what post-traumatic growth is. It's like taking those bits and pieces from life and making them into really beautiful furnishings.
One of the things I'm really proud of is I have a table over to the left. It's not the one that all this equipment is sitting on, but it's got a bunch of books sitting on it over to my left. And it is, I think I got the idea from somebody else. I saw they had done something like this, and I got excited about it to make a table that was extremely sturdy. The first things I made as a student, I tried making a desk for myself one time, and it went, it just folded, because I didn't have a parent to model that stuff, and so I drove nails through the leg into the plywood, just you know, which split and had no holding power. And over the years, I've evolved in my understanding of what it takes to support a table. So I created a really honking, big, heavy-duty table with the top is made of two planks that are about this thick, right?
Wow.
And then the legs are supported by, I think, 6x6s or something like that. And then it's all stressed by burning it all with a torch, which kind of blackened it and made it. And then also, I think I pounded in some of the curves and so on. So I feel very, I wish I could show it to you. It's something I feel proud of. I did it some years ago. And it's lasted me a long time. I mean, this table is going to go into the next millennium.
You discovered how to make it strong from those earlier experiences and experiments.
Yeah. And maybe in the process, I made myself stronger in a certain way.
Yes. And that's the resilience. It's building a table, having it collapse, and saying, oh, okay, that one collapsed. Yeah. What do I do differently? Yeah. Instead of, I am terrible at building tables. I will never build another table.
Right. Yeah. Right. So let's talk a little bit about the visual format of your book. And by the way, maybe you can, I got your book as a PDF, but you've got a physical copy. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. Who did the artwork?
I'm not sure.
Okay, the artwork's beautiful.
It is. It's quite beautiful. It says cover design Face Out Studio. So we have a cover design from Face Out.
Yeah, and then open it up so we can see kind of what it looks like inside.
Yeah, inside there are over 100 affirmations, the different one on each page for different subjects. And on the left side, there's the wonderings, which are those conversations with our little... with our little guy who's sitting on our shoulder. So for aging, for example, are you distracted and discomforted and worried and mourning the losses that come with aging? And then on the right-hand side, and then there's more about the wonderings, then there's the affirmations. I recognize myself no matter how much the way I look changes. I meet the losses that come with aging with warmth and humor.
Yeah. So where do these come from? They come from you. And what's your process in creating these affirmations that turn into a book?
Well, what my process was I was thinking, because my editor specifically wanted these affirmations to be a support to people during these times that we are living in right now.
Yeah.
So I just took the different big themes that come up, because I teach with people just all the time. So I'm always hearing what are the current things that are bothering people or worrying people? So I'm sort of split them into themes like money, health, isolation or crowdedness, chaos and predictability. You know, what are the big themes that people work with? Yeah. And then I did sub-themes, and then I would think about those themes and make guesses about what was most important, and then make guesses for the little one on the shoulder, what was most important to them that needed to be named, just based on myself and the entire resonance community that I work with people talking about these kinds of things.
Oh, okay. So is a lot of the work that you're doing these days online, given COVID?
It's all been online. Yeah, I did only two in-person presentations in all of 2021. And I was teaching almost every day.
Wow.
So reaching the world, really, from my little room.
Yeah, right. Right. But I think, you know, it sounds like in your wonderings and your affirmation, you're kind of reaching into yourself, but as you say, also drawing on what you've been learning and from the people who attend your sessions, but kind of tuning into yourself. I believe that there's something universal in each of us, and that we can tap into it. And I think that's what good poets do, is they tap into, well, and writers of many sorts, but poetry in particular, to tap into universal themes that somehow touch lots of hearts, unless it's the kind of poetry that's so abstract that you have to study years to know all the references and all. I've never been able to get into that kind of poetry. But there are a lot of people writing poetry these days that you don't need a thesaurus or a special book to understand and to relate to.
Yeah, I love poets like Mary Oliver, who wrote, you know, the soft animal of the body.
Yeah. Okay, and so you've got more than 100 affirmations in this book. Affirmations for turbulent times, and that was part of the mission that you were given, and certainly addresses that. And so let's have you read another one.
Yes, sure.
I was interested in the initial one from one of the sections is called
Unpredictability.
Yeah. Living with chaos and uncertainty. And so there's a wondering on one page, and then on the facing page is the affirmation. So read us the whole wondering and the whole affirmation.
I'll do it. For unpredictability, wonderings. Is unpredictability hard on you? Do you need to know what's happening so that you can imagine yourself into the future? If you long for predictability, do you need to remember the predictability of your own beating heart? Do you have a need to be able to use the present moment as certainty enough to help you move forward? When you realize that 1 minute from now, you may still be sitting here reading, or that you can at least predict that much of the future, does your body relax, knowing that you can know the next minute? And as you feel into the next hour, can you see a little bit of what will happen? And does your body relax with a tiny bit of predictability? You may have some sense that you can see into tomorrow too. And with that, is there a kind of relaxation, a reassurance? And then the affirmation says, I may not be able to know what the future will bring, but I consent to my own resonating self being there waiting for me. I will meet the future and myself there, whatever happens, with my own compassion, understanding, and warmth. I send myself into the future to meet me at the edge of my not knowing. I hold my own hand as we step into the not knowing, and I have faith in my own capacity to bring my strengths and gifts to meet it all, whatever comes.
Very nice. Very nice. You know what? Just spring something on you. You can say yes or no.
Yes, sure.
But I noticed that you have a viola, is it?
Or a cello.
A cello. A cello behind you. Is there a chance that maybe you could play some affirming bit of cello? Oh,
I wish that I were that good. You know, I started when I was 50. And
good for you. Good for you.
And I am now 59.
Okay.
And I have been working on Oak Christmas Tree, and it's still very hard for me.
Okay. Okay. Well,
I'm very slow. Okay. I think the reason I waited till I was 50 was because I thought, okay, now I'm 50 years old. Now I'm going to be able to take as long as I need to learn this darned and beautiful instrument, which has no frets, as you all know.
Yeah, right.
And I will be able to say with grace and some bit of humor, no, when people ask me, I will play for them. So hopefully I'm hitting the chords of grace and humor in my inability to give you anything beautiful from the cello.
Okay. Well, we all know what the cello sounds like, and it's such a wonderfully warm and resonant sound that it produces. And I, too, have been a frustrated musician for much of my life, and I decided to tackle the piano around 50, around that same period, and I got a ways into it, but also it's kind of coincided, maybe not at 50, but later with some memory issues such that I was interested in improvisation more than in memorizing long pieces.
Yeah.
And I found that the improvisation really doesn't work unless you can remember, unless you can have a theme kind of running through it. And you know, I've had a few teachers along the way, but I sort of ran into that as an obstacle.
Very interesting. Yes, I can't memorize the music at all for the cello.
Yeah.
I'm stuck with, you know, my glasses squinting at the music.
Right.
Going, what is the next note?
So what would you hope that your readers would take away from this book?
Well, what I most hope for readers to take away is there are a couple of things. One is I like to think of this book, and it's so soft. It feels so soft. It's such a lovely
An inviting looking book.
Yeah, and it's just really wonderfully tactile with the, you can feel the lines. But that it's a hug in a hardcover, that they would have it with them and that they would be able to kind of reach out and just kind of touch it and know that their experience mattered and that there were ways to talk about whatever their experience was and ways to come back to their own mission. Because this is what I really think that affirmations do for us, is they bring us back to our own mission. They bring us back to the central longings that we have. So if we were doing a kind of a really big affirmation for you, David, I wonder if there would be something about reaching people, about bringing people, in a way, beautiful news of the world.
And do you have one like that written out?
And about that. Well, no, I'm just making one up for you right now.
Okay, because go ahead.
I think we all need these beautiful, a sense of our own beautiful mission. And that what I would hope if as readers read this book, what I would hope is that they would begin to find their own like general sense of mission. So tell me whether you have a sense for yourself that you love to reach people with beautiful news.
You're asking me that as a question?
Yes, I am.
Well, when I... that's what I've wanted to do. It hasn't always been beautiful, but I've wanted to reach people with a broader vision of psychology than was normally put forth in most traditional colleges. And a lot of that was pretty negative. I got very interested in myself that psychology has got to be broader than that, broader than it's not all about pathology and so on. And fortunately, my first teaching job, full-time professorial type job, was in a department that was very young and was kind of the rubric that we worked under was humanistic psychology, although I think each faculty person had a somewhat idiosyncratic sense of what that was about, humanistic. But the first time I heard the word humanistic psychology, my reaction was, oh, that's my people. Mm-hmm. That sounds right. That's got the right ring to it. Mm-hmm. And I think in my life, I've worked intuitively a lot. Not always obvious to me, but then in retrospect, I realized, wait a second, there was some kind of intuition at work here that moved me in this direction or that direction. Mm. So I wanted to...
Then if we just start there, we'll go on from there, but would the beginning of your mission be to follow my deep intuition in order to bring to the world an expansive view of the healing of the mind?
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm. So for you...
My grandmother was an evangelical person who had in her youth run tent meetings around the country and so on. And she despaired for my soul as I moved away from all of that as I got older. And I tried to assure her, I said, you know, I'm not as far away as you might think I am.
Right.
because I was beginning to really sense that what I was doing was a spiritual mission of some sort.
Mm.
And interestingly, she published a newspaper called Healing Hope.
Oh.
And I was some years into the doing the podcast when it kind of hit me, duh.
Here I am.
I think maybe I'm carrying that on in a way.
Oh, that's very beautiful. It gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Hmm. I was just reading Ian McGilchrist this morning, who I love, his new book, The Matter with Things. And he was writing about how with little truths, it's very easy to think that little truths are opposed to one another. They seem very contradictory to one another. But once you get to the big, profound truths, they are no longer in contradiction with one another.
Yeah. I interviewed him. What's his first name? It was a long time ago.
Ian Gilchrist,
yes.
Yeah. So this is what we're hoping for. We both of us have this longing, I think, to expand the ways that we reach people and that we bring healing of the mind to the world.
Well, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I have a friend who says that this work, and I'm sure your work also, David, is the work of making brains good places to live.
I like that. I hope I can remember that. That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I wonder if you might have one that would be sort of good to more or less close us off here.
Oh, sure. Sure I do. How about if we do one about worrying and having an energy? Here's our worrying and energy with our wonderings. Do you feel your life energy trickling away from you as you worry? Do your worries sap your strength and take you away from yourself? Does your worry jangle your nerves and make your chest buzz? Does it make it hard to rest? Does your mind never stop? Do the thoughts run repetitively without ceasing? And do they keep you out of the present moment? Is it hard to tell if you are more afraid or more lonely? Is it hard to find yourself within the static so that you can know yourself and relax? Do you wish inner peace were a real lived experience? Do you long to be able to use all your capacities to build and nourish your life rather than expending them on anxiety? And here's the affirmation.
Before you do the affirmation, I'm just struck by these worryings actually could be poems, you know, if they were laid out more as a poem instead of as a paragraph.
Yes.
As I was listening to it, I really had that feeling strongly.
Thank you. I take that as a very sweet observation on this word. And then here's the affirmation. Even when I worry, I find my way back to my own center. No matter how much anxiety there is, I can find my peaceful self. I am rooted in the earth, and I pull the calm and quiet out of the ground into my belly and bring peace to my heart and my lungs. I let my mind pause, using my focus on my breath to support a mind full of self-warmth, run by life rather than by thoughts. I know that I often feel both fear and alarmed aloneness, and I commit to caring for and providing companionship for the parts of myself that feel scared or alarmed and alone. I let them know that they will have someone somewhere, me, to offer warmth and witness to them. I offer myself this accompaniment fully and generously. I nourish myself with love, no matter where my emotions wander.
But also could be poetry.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, do you have any closing thoughts about that might be helpful for people to get through the holidays? We've just, yesterday was Christmas, right?
Yeah.
I've lost track of time. I think yesterday was Christmas. But we still have New Year's coming up. And so for some people, it's kind of an extended holiday period.
Yeah. So our wondering for ourselves might be, do you need any acknowledgement that the holidays have not always been the most fun? Do you need acknowledgement that sometimes people have trauma patterns around the holidays that make them stressful? Or that there might be high expectations or a longing to be able to let people know how much they're loved without having to overextend our own pocketbooks or our own abilities to spend time with people? And then our affirmation might be, in the holiday season, I walk with myself exactly as I am and know that I am enough. I allow myself to enjoy whatever parts of the holidays that speak to me.
Very nice. Sarah Payton, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David. So happy to be here.
I found Sarah Payton's open, smiling face to be good medicine. Her presence really supports her healing message. It strikes me as ironic that it has taken so long for psychology to endorse the power of words to reach our hearts, to uplift, to encourage. Of course, mothers have known this perhaps forever, and poets definitely, as well as the storytellers of old. Psychology, having wedded itself to the scientific method, often seems closed to the obvious. Once neuroscience is able to track the actual brain processes associated with a thing, the obvious, the truths of the heart, are welcomed into the official psychological tent. As a neuroscience educator, Sarah Payton provides an important service, bridging the hard science to the generalizations we ordinary mortals can understand. She's written 3 books exploring the idea of resonance. How is it that words somehow link her brain to mine or my brain to yours? She explains that words seem to have a natural affinity for the neurons that underlie our thoughts and feelings, that words, in a sense, connect my neurons to yours. Warm, encouraging, affirming words, she says, tend to set up a resonance between us, like the strings of one cello vibrating in sympathy with another. This resonance can also happen within us as individuals. Thus, the subtitle of her book, Resonant Words to Soothe Body and Mind. I've been aware of affirmations for some time, from Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking to the practices of various spiritual traditions, both modern and ancient. But I have to confess, I never invested much of my own time and energy in the practice. So I must admit I was surprised and, yes, impressed by Sarah's report that there has been actual neuropsychological research on affirmations, which confirm their calming and healing impact on our nervous systems. Originally, Sarah tells us she was studying nonviolent communication and nonviolent opposition to war. The platform she has completed with her books have turned out to be a perfect vehicle for channeling that early impulse. And this current book could not be more timely. There is so much going on to potentially arouse our anxiety. Multiple varieties of COVID, global warming, extinctions, crazy politics, including a global threat to democracies, and so on. Most of us could really use some non-toxic, non-addictive, anti-anxiety medicine. In my opinion, Sarah Payton's Affirmations for Turbulent Times, Resonant Words to Soothe Body and Mind, is just what the doctor ordered.
Hello, Dr. Dave. This is Cindy Gozanski from Portland, Maine. I am a master's level psychotherapist, and I have chosen to support Shrink Wrap Radio financially because of the immense benefit that I get from your podcast. I am in private practice and an adjunct instructor for our graduate counseling program at University of Southern Maine, and find that your Shrink Wrap Radio guests and information is so helpful to me in both of these fields. Often, after I hear one of your guests, I purchase the book or go to their website and I'm able to really incorporate more of the amazing information, techniques, tips, and other things that are so useful that you provide. Again, I am so grateful for the wonderful features that Shrink Wrap Radio provides to all of the listeners, and especially the professional listeners like myself in the area. And I have shared Shrink Wrap Radio and will continue to do so with many of my students and colleagues. Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Dave, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Cindy Gozanski, for your spirited endorsement. I'm happy to announce that we have a new monthly donor by the name of Linda Schuler. Thank you, Linda. And of course, thank you to all you other monthly supporters. Since our show reaches thousands of listeners each month, you might think we have similar numbers of donors. Actually, the number of monthly donors is currently around 70. So believe me, each monthly donor is really important to keep us going. If you're not in that group, I hope you'll take action to do so if that's possible for you. That being said, time to shrink wrap it up. Thanks to today's guest, neuroscience educator Sarah Payton, for discussing her work and her latest and very timely book, Affirmations for Turbulent Times, Resonant Words to Soothe Body and Mind. Next week, my guest will be psychotherapist Jennifer Sweeten, discussing her book, 8 Key Brain Areas of Mental Health and Illness. More digestible neuroscience for all you people helpers out there. So until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves and others.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.